Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello there, everybody. How are you doing? It's the Game on Sunday podcast. Michael Lester here with you again. And joined, as usual, by Martin Carney and Tomás Mulcahy to talk about football and hurling, and we have loads, gentlemen, to talk about. It's hard to know where to begin, but Tomás, why not actually begin with the hurling? Because the big talking point, the big game going into the weekend was Clare and Limerick. And I have to say there was a kind of a lesson here for me in terms of never be presumptuous about the end of any sporting event. Because with about 15 minutes left, I started switching channels because there was other sport on the same day. And Clare were going to win it, obviously, at that stage. And then I switched back again and I discovered Limerick had won the thing.
Yeah, Michael, and I suppose, look, we were kind of all excited last weekend speaking about previewing the games and, you know, just that was a standout fixture in terms of the rivalry between the two counties, going into Ennis, a cauldron of a venue in terms of, you know, the crowd is in the top of the pitch, 20,000 full house there, and I think it lived up to all expectations, you know, scoreline of 315 to 118, but as you said yourself, you thought, 52 minutes gone the clock, it's 115 to 9 points to Clare, and you would say the game is over. Done and dusted, big win for Clare. You could see the excitement on the faces of the supporters, even the young kids are on the ground. They knew this was going to be a massive, massive win for them. But, I mean, 3 goals in 7 minutes for Limerick. You've got to take your half to win in one sense. They got lucky with the first one, but in luck. But once you get a bit of momentum, then at that stage, you carry it through. And they showed that real kind of All-Ireland champion spirit in terms of never giving up, never say die, and made a few changes, trusted the process that they were in. And I suppose the big thing from on the field of play, they didn't panic, but off the field of play as well, I think they didn't panic either. And they trusted in the process that they've been through over the last 6-7 years with this group of players. And they came out on top. And I suppose, look, it was a massive, massive victory for Limerick because it sets them up next weekend. They have a home game against Tipperary. And if they were to win that, they'd probably keep thinking they're home and hosed in terms of the All-Ireland series. And 4 points can get you through. And then for Clare, for all that they've done, Michael, and we've seen the league campaign and we've seen the National League triumph. And we saw some brilliant, brilliant play from them last weekend. And then now they must come to Cork and similar to Cork and either side to lose. And there is a chance they might make it out of Munster, you know. So that's the beauty of hurling. It was an incredible Sunday.
Looking at the match, was it a case, Tomás, of Limerick? I saw one headline describing them as green giants, you know, and their resilience and all that. But having said that, you have to also ask the question, some players defending at the end was very sloppy.
Clear defending was very, very poor, Michael. And look, I suppose, like, Clare's record of the last two or three years at home hasn't been the best in terms of the first game and amongst the provincial championship series, even though they've went on to further success. They've struggled a little bit at home, but like, they're the highest team in terms of conceding goals in the Royal Robin series since it began. And I think up to including last Sunday, they've actually conceded 31 goals, right? And I mean, that's an awful lot. Conceding three last Sunday was really the cause of their defeat. To be honest with you, you can concede three goals in any game and you're not going to win, you know? So that's something that I'd say Brian Nolan has to be very, very conscious of, right? Massive passages of play, some very, very good performances, but conceding those goals, you're opening the opportunities for the opposition to have a look at that. And I'd say it's certainly, if you're Cork management, that's something that they have to be on the guard for as well. Like, there are goals there against Clare, definitely.
It's a fascination, because back in the day, when Clare were in their pomp, if you're going back, whatever it is now, 20, 25 years ago on that, like, there was Brian Nolan, you know, a statue in defence. And of course, Davy Fitz in goal behind him, kind of, you know. Ginny, you didn't get too much past him.
No, I mean, look, you had the Brian Lones and you had the Anthony Daly's, and you had incredible Frank Lone. Brian Lone's brother was in the right corner beside it as well, right? You know, massive, massive stature, and really defended really, really well. And like, very good attacking players in Clare, very good going forward. But that has to be a concern in terms of their championship form going forward, in terms of, like, last Sunday, they really gave two presents to Limerick. And if they hadn't done that, they would have commanded that lead, you know? I mean, three goals in 7 minutes, Michael. It's kind of a 9 points ahead, 12-point turnaround. I think Brian would be sitting back last Sunday night scratching his head and say, how did this happen to us?
Yeah, it's interesting because goals, obviously, late goals for Limerick in the hurling. And Martin, in terms of football, I suppose the big game, if you like, over the weekend, and there was plenty of football, but Derry and Donegal, and there was so much talk again going into this particular game. And then the way it panned out in the end, it was a fascination, because I suppose much of the talk was about the two managers, you know, Jim McGuinness and Mickey Hart, all that kind of stuff. But Derry conceded 4 goals in that game, and a lot of them, Martin, were down to this business of playing your goalkeeper out in the middle of the field. That certainly came unstuck.
Oh, very much so. Like, this sweeper keeper thing that has become a modern phenomenon this year in particular, Michael. You know, I heard Mickey Hart afterwards, when he was interviewed, talking about the risk and reward element in it, and indeed the following day, Kevin McStane, his post-match interview, talked about the same issue of risk and reward when you bring out your goalkeeper. But it came unstuck badly from a Derry point of view. Like, the importance of the kickouts nowadays cannot be overemphasised in Gaelic football. And basically, with the Derry kickouts, Donegal conceded them. Donegal let them play short. Donegal didn't bother pressing up on them. And because they had seen in the league final, when Dublin pressed up on Derry, Derry were hitting the ball over the top. And the likes, for example, of Enda McAvoy, the Derry centre-back, he was running on to breaking ball in those games and ended up scoring 2-2 against Dublin. Now, the last day, by conceding the kick-outs to Derry, Derry had to go short and had to try and play through Donegal, and it simply weren't able to do it with any consistent effect. Now, the opposite side of things, Derry knew that Donegal knew that Derry would press, and in Shane Patton, they have a goalkeeper who has a fabulous range of kicks when it comes to restarts. And when they press, he went long, and basically, Donegal won the breaks, but Oran Lynch for whatever reason, figured that he had to come out and contest these long balls. Now, it's nonsensical to me to come out at the best at times, but when you have allegedly the two best midfielders in the country on your side in Conor Glass and Brendan Rodgers, it doesn't make sense to me that the goalkeeper had to come out. Now, it in my book anyway, the sign of a team that's up for a game is based on how ravenous they are on the breaking ball. And when those long kickouts from Shane Patton came out, Donegal gobbled up the breaks, caught Oran Lynch kind of way out of place, not once, not twice, but on three occasions. And from those three occasions, they actually ended up getting goals. Now, honestly, somebody on the field, they shouldn't have needed Mickey Hart to actually give the instruction, but somebody on the field in a role of leadership should have told Lynch after the first goal in particular, hey kid, stay at home, just mind the nets, give your kickouts, all of that, but we don't need you out around the middle. And it's certainly okay. Mickey tried to justify it afterwards and all of that, you know, being part of his pre-match plan. But honestly, a scenario, they have 4 weeks now to kind of reconsider and reset for the actual All-Ireland Championship. But a scenario that I feel myself he has to revisit and actually kind of reset and, you know, just tell the goalkeeper, basically, we don't need you out around the middle of the field.
But I saw some of that as well, right? And I saw that the goals conceded, right? But he's not the only goalkeeper in the country doing it at this stage. It seems to be part of the process or the plan or the coaching structure within the team to bring the goalkeeper out, you know? And you're going to see more and more of this and goals conceded.
Yes. Well, Rory Began got caught out of position a couple of times. Darrow Boyle, who scored two of the goals actually against Derry the last day, and there were superbly dinked balls in both cases. And an interesting player in many respects. Darrow Boyle, as far as I know, played international soccer at underage level. And he's very, very, very good feet on him. A lovely little instinct, you know, in terms of just placing the ball neatly over the goalkeeper. But he, in an earlier game against Fermanagh, got a similar goal. But this sweeper-keeper phenomenon has become, I'm not saying, an epidemic in the game, but it's becoming more and more familiar. And what you see, actually, Tomás, is you see a lot of managers picking outfield players in goals so as they can execute this role as a sweeper-keeper. And, like, Mayo last Sunday got away with it. Like, Colm Reid plays forwards for his club Knockmore, and he's goalkeeper for Mayo. Now, he came out once in the first half the last day and in a similar situation got turned over, and had Roscommon been that little bit sharper, they could well have got a goal with Reap way out of position completely. But they were just sluggish and working the ball forward. Hadn't got the slickness maybe to Donegal had, and as a consequence, didn't reap the dividend. But it's something that I feel myself, I personally can't stand it. I cannot stand it. Maybe I'm a traditionalist in this, but seeing these Bucks playing the wandering minstrel, going all over the field, coming up into the attacks. Okay, it's all right watching Middlesbrough in Leeds last night and watching the Middlesbrough goalkeeper coming up and doing it. But in Gaelic football, I don't think myself that is a part to play at all. And basically, I'm against it. And was I sorry to see a goalkeeper being exposed in this respect? The answer is emphatically no.
Michael, Leicester, there's a chance for you and me we could get our game on goal. Our football ability. You don't have to say football anymore because there's no right. I think yeah, on that one, Leicester, I think we'd have a great chance. How's your pick out?
Well, no, it actually wasn't bad. And I played a little bit, the bit of Gaelic that I played. I played for
you're
St.
being modest, Michael. You're being modest now.
I played for St. Jarvis in goal. I think I said that's right. That's before Brian Tassie took over, and then he had the audacity to become a very good midfield player. So maybe it was in existence back in those days as well. Yeah. People are going back 50-something years here, but anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, could I take up just a small point in relation to the hurling, Tomás? Yes. I watched the hurling in the clubhouse in Roscommon. I had a few drinks before going out to the game, and I watched it. And when I left the clubhouse, Clare were 9 points up And, you know, I remember, I just couldn't see them losing. Do you remember in the first half, the two wonderful saves that the Limerick goalkeeper made? They were huge saves. I think, actually, had Nicky Quaid not been on his game, the Limerick faithful would have been leaving the game three-quarter ways through the second half. Such would have been Clare's dominance. But they were sensational saves. The one in particular where the ball bounced off the ground and came up.
That was incredible, yeah, Martin. It was incredible. Nicky Quaid was, and look, his distribution, his pop outs and stuff. You won't see him come out the field too often. He's a man.
The other thing about coming out the field, do you ever see a man with 9 All-Ireland medals coming out the field? Stephen Cluxton, the most bemedalled goalkeeper in the history of Gaelic football. Do you ever see him going wandering? Not at all. He minds his nets and he organises the defence.
We haven't seen it yet, Martin.
He's got all right. Okay. But at 40, 41 years of age, maybe it's unlikely that it'll start any day soon.
Yeah, it is. And he's a smaller man, easy to lob. He'd be easy to lob.
The only time,
I take your word on that.
The only time Cluxton comes out of goal is to wander up the field to take a winning point. By the way, so
that's right, or to receive his cup after.
Or up the homeless, or steps exactly, the homeless standing in his cup. Exactly. Yeah. But Mark, in terms of the hurling, you're right. I mean, 9 points up, you would say the game was over, and we're playing right? But had a couple of chances to actually bury Limerick and take it, and particularly that first half period as well. Look, Limerick would be disappointed at the start that they had. They were 2 up, had one or two goal scoring chances, didn't take them, and allowed Clare the momentum and got
that's it. Right.
They took over completely, right? And should have been further ahead than maybe the 1:10 points at half time, you know, should have been further ahead because Limerick weren't playing well that time. But look, it's a worry for us all in terms of Limerick because they were like that last year. Their first round game at the Munster Championship wasn't brilliant. They didn't have a brilliant Munster campaign last year, but all they wanted to do is get out of Munster, and they're on the right track now. And when they went to Croke Park, they became a different team, became a different animal, right, you know. And like the John Conlon at centre back, he was unbelievable for Clare, incredible.
Up
40, 45 minutes of the game, maybe 50 minutes of the game, and then suddenly came an inch right, and takes over, you know, takes over the whole game, and he was the master. He was the masterman.
I thought Keane Lynch was a wee bit like, again, my limited knowledge of hurling. I thought in the first half, the play of Shane O'Donnell in the front forward line for Clare was simply wonderful.
It was incredible, yeah.
And, you know, low set to the ground, wonderful, wonderful ability to turn on a sixpence. It was delightful to watch his play, actually. You know, in an era where, you know, big men is the kind of the prototype and the norm that one kind of hopes to get on a team. This kind of guy, maybe 5'9" or so, that's stocky, low set to the ground. It was wonderful to see the 50-50 balls, the 40-60 balls that guy was winning. And to me, that's what that's why I want to go to a hurling match or a football match. Seeing these contests, these man-on-man contests, where they're scalping and where there's a lot of manliness involved in it. I'm watching him on Sunday. He's the one guy in the Clare team that I give plaudits to, like, from my, as I said, limited knowledge of the game.
He actually was creating, Martin, some of the chances for some of the colleagues around him that, in actual fact, Clare didn't always take the best advantage of some of them because they had Limerick open.
Yeah, he won a great ball, and he set up the first goal for Aidan McCarthy the first time.
Yeah.
You know, well, the vision that he had, because normally you might see a guy in that position throw the ball up and be happy enough to tap it over the bar. He had the vision to see Aidan McCarthy standing across on the other side of the square and getting the ball straight into his hand. And it was the easiest of tasks of putting it into the net. But like Shane O'Donnell has been doing this for a long time now. But he has really, really become very much a team player. He was very strong getting his own scores and goals back in the last couple of years. But he's become a leader up there. He's become a team player. He's bringing other guys into the game as well. And the same as Keane Lynch did in that second half period as well. When they needed somebody, Limerick needed somebody to grasp the game Because they were struggling. Somebody needed to become a leader, and Heinlich did that. He was phenomenal in the last 10, 15 minutes, the way he distributed the ball, got scores, guys coming off the shoulder, picking ball up, being able to feed him with the passes. And again, he was like Shane O'Donnell, and every team needs to have somebody like that, and it was just a joy to watch. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah, very much so. And also, Lynch's ability to drive forward with the ball, to actually, you know, and to draw defenders onto him and then to let the ball off to whoever's coming off his shoulder. You know, he sucks in opponents and just creates that opening then with the timing of his pass for colleagues who are coming off his shoulder. I thought again, like in the watching the game at the time, I just thought he was wonderful in what he did in that respect. I didn't see the late goals on fairness because at that stage I got into the football match. But what I saw of it was a joy to watch it and a great
enter. We went so if you left it for football, you're not taking off me anyway, Karen. Not a chance.
Well, speaking of the football, Martin, we're talking here about the game at the Hyde, as they say, down in Roscommon. Mayo winning that, and again, this is kind of it's intriguing because Mayo play better in Dr. Hyde Park than Roscommon do, and that's been going on for a while now. And of course, Mayo won on Sunday.
Yeah, that is true. Like Roscommon have won their last two championships against Mayo when they have played them in McHale Park here.
Yeah.
But last Sunday, Mayo were the better team last Sunday, I thought, overall. Like what they got from the game last Sunday, they got a good display, a good collective display from the full forward line. I mean, all through this year, actually, the guy who's been carrying their forward line has been Ryan O'Donoghue. And even at Cork the last day, he scored something like 113. You know, people are expecting a huge amount from Tommy Conroy. Now, Tommy Conroy is one of these unfortunates who got a bad, bad cruciate ligament injury 2 years ago. And he has found it very difficult to actually regain his form and get back to the levels he was at. But I felt on Sunday that he scored 2 points from play. Now, in the league games he had this year, he only scored 1 point, but he got 2 from play last Sunday. And I thought what I liked about him in the way he scored them, he didn't seem to think he had to take on 2 or 3 men. He just got the opportunity, saw the post and kicked the ball over. But I have a feeling that those scores will do his confidence the world of good because the man has loads of ability, great pace. But I think he was just, you know, Michael, there's often a situation in games where guys try too hard when things aren't going well for him. And I think he was one of those. And the third man on the forward line, Aidan O'Shea, I thought the early goal he got really kind of, in a sense, provided a cushion for his team. And his distribution and his all-round commanding performance, I think, again, was probably his best one of the year. And so between the three of them in the full forward line, I think they scored something like maybe 110. And for Mayo, you know, that's the return that Mayo forwards and Mayo followers are looking to get from their team. But there are areas, though, from a Mayo context, and again, it comes back to your point that you were making earlier about kickouts. They lost 38% of their own kickouts, Michael.
Yes.
They lost 38% of their own kickouts, in particular when they were forced long. And that's an area that Galway will look at. And I thought around the middle of the field, they didn't seem to be picking up breaks or they didn't seem to be able to win primary possession in the way that was needed. And indeed, even late in the game, I think, had Donny Smith and Enda Smith and Owen McCormack, the three of the Roscommon lads, just shown a little bit more composure, that could have actually made the last 5 minutes a hell of a sight more interesting. But the main aspect of the game that I thought, on reflection, came through. At no stage, Michael, were Roscommon able to get a lead on Mayo. They were in arrears most of the time. They got level 2 or 3 times, but they never got in front. And you could feel the crowd. You could feel it in them. They were really, you know, just wanting to see their lads get that few extra scores to kind of generate the enthusiasm to get greater kind of, shall we say, support behind them. But those few scores never materialised. And as a consequence, Mayo were always able to just move a score, move another score, move another score, put it out to five, put it out to six. And eventually, I think they did deserve to win, but they have work to do still.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Ah, sure. And that's always, a good thing going forward. And maybe, Martin, something similar could be said about Galway, who are on the other side of the draw, because Galway just robbed Sligo at the weekend. And and like in time added on, they were right. A beaten team and then just managed to somehow squeak it out.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, actually. You know, I saw Sligo play Mayo here last Wednesday night in an under-20 game. And Sligo demolished Mayo in the second half of that game. They won it eventually by 5 points, but they demolished them. Now, at underage in particular, Sligo are building very, very impressively. They reached a Hogan Cup final last year. Summerhill reached a Hogan Cup final last year. And in recent years, St. Attractus and Tubbercurry have reached All-Ireland Final B, the ultimate stages of that. And it's from those two teams, they're getting a lot of good players. And when you look at last Sunday, for 72 minutes, they led that game. For 72 minutes. And I mean, they had Galway on the ropes, and even in the last goal that Rob Finnerty got, like, they had possession that time, they carelessly squandered it, and I think we've talked about it all year, their injury crisis and the absence of Damien Comer. But I felt myself that his introduction the last day, it came maybe about 10 minutes into the second half. He transformed Galway, actually. He gave them belief. He gave them a sense that, yeah, come on, we can get enough out of this and get enough improvement in our performance to win it. And not alone did he set up, did he get 2 points, but he it was who set up the move, actually, that resulted in the goal. But as you said earlier, Michael, they robbed Sligo in many respects. And I know Patrick Joyce's own words were that it was an act of grand larceny. But there's equally another interesting little point on this. We just take this situation, had Sligo won it, well, that would have put a completely different perspective on the All-Ireland series, because sure, it would have meant that you would have had two Division III teams in provincial finals, there for a second seeds. And it would have meant that certainly Kildare, Fermanagh, and possibly Loud wouldn't have been in the All-Ireland series. That whole thing of who qualifies for Salmon, who plays in the Tailteann Cup, would have been nearly turned on his head. I know that this weekend's game between Louth and Kildare is critical to Kildare, because if they lose that, they're definitely in the Tailteann Cup. Whereas if they win it, I think they will qualify to be one of the contestants for Sam Maguire. But overall, Sligo will. I know Tony McEntee said afterwards, their manager, that, you know, they shouldn't be too disappointed. my God, I'd have been very disappointed if I was like a follower last Sunday, because it's seldom that they actually give Galway, shall we say, a game like they gave them last week. In fact, when they played them last year, I think they were destroyed by something like 11 or 13 points. Was it in the Connacht final?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the improvement they have shown is considerable and is admirable. But I think it would have been an icing on the cake, Michael, had they put one over on Galway. It didn't happen. So we have the old firm again playing in the Connacht final in Salthill 2 weeks' time at the unfortunate hour of 4 o'clock, Michael. So God help us trying to get out of Salthill afterwards. That's what I say. We need your rallying skills, Mike.
On
the back roads.
You don't. You need a hang glider or something like that. Because there is, you're right, Martin, there is no way out of Salthill.
And as Big Wig Fern said last week to me, you know, you get more sympathy on death row in many respects. If you're trying to explain to the wife after, to your partner afterwards, why you were late. But anyway, that's another story.
For those of us fortunate enough down through the years, I've been in that situation, there's nothing like going up to a guard and saying, "How are you, lads?" You know, because you could. We actually got Joe Brawley out of Salthill on one Sunday game occasion where he had to get back to Belfast for reasons that I'm not quite clear, but he had to get back. And he had a flight when Galway Airport was still in operation. And he had to get out. So I made a few phone calls. Got him out in a squad car. With the lights on and all the rest of it. Lying down in the back seat with a coat over him. Simply because the guards who were bringing him out, they didn't want the superintendent to see them because they were doing this kind of on the QT. But anyway, I was still in Salthill. I was still in Pier Stadium. And Joe rang me and to say how it had all worked and that he was out at Galway Airport and he was ready to go and blah, 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 and, you know, thanking me for... Or get the thing. But I heard this shouting in the background. Fellas shouting, Joe. And I said to him, I said, "What's going on?" I said, "There's somebody shouting at you." And he said, "Oh, don't worry." He said, "That's just the pilot."
Yes, of course.
Well, I'd say he did talk. He'd be talking as we all ran here, Michael, as well, you know.
That's lovely, Michael. That's lovely.
Listen, Tomás Mulcahy.
Yeah.
Looking here at the Munster Championship, the group situation.
Yes.
Cork.
Yeah, Michael, it's...
what are we going to do here?
My God. I wasn't looking at the footballers on Saturday. Jeez, they weren't... They put Kenny Curry to the pin of their collar, and I was saying, like, Sunday, I was really confident about Sunday because the vibes coming from the camp were very strong, Michael. Our record over the last couple of years hasn't been brilliant. Look, we've Cork of 11 championship matches there in the last couple of years, 2022, 23, 24. And the trend is continuing. We've only won 4 of them. One of those was against Antrim, Michael. So we were going down there with a lot of confidence. Where it was coming from, I don't know. But we are hearing so much about Waterford and the trouble around the camp and... They were out at 2 o'clock in the morning and for training, and then they were picked up again at 4 o'clock and they went to Clonestrand, and then there was hassle of the trip overseas and Portugal, and clubs were handing back all their tickets. Oh, they set us up nicely. We bought it. We had a massive crowd down there. It was probably 3-1 Cork supporters against Waterford. Oh, they sucked us in big time. And like, you were kind of saying, watching the game, and, like, the frustration was, I was saying to Martin there before we came on air, right, this GA goal and stuff like that. Like, I mean, I nearly cut televisions last Sunday in 2 different locations and fired them out the door because it froze, it stopped, it
That's right.
Quality was terrible. I ran from a hotel I was in over to another bar to see. I guess you say it's on. It's going well here. Got over to the bar on the other side, and suddenly 5 minutes into it, stopped there. Back to the hotel again. Oh, what a disaster! Then to see the result the week here. Not a good day to be a Red, Michael. Not a good day to be Red. And we can say all we want about Cork, but you got to give it credit to Waterford. Their bats were reward. They were written off everywhere. But somewhere, they really dug in. They got a very good result. And when Cork came back to level the game in the second half, made a couple of substitutions that I thought they would. I thought Cork would push on, but we didn't. And they weren't allowed to. Waterford were just majestic. But it'd be concerning for Cork, Michael. We're going against Clare next Sunday. Clare come to Cork. But I know what people say, you can't afford to lose two matches in a row because it will finish your Munster Championship campaign. And it looks that way. 4 points has got you through before, but it might not be good enough this time around. So it's a winner-take-all next weekend. And the worrying thing from a Cork perspective is look, We scored 125, but we conceded 225 as well. And the big question, I suppose, Mark and Pat Ryan's head this week is, does he have to change some of the older guys? Does he have to put them on the bench? Does he have to change in terms of bringing in youth, giving the youngsters their chance? A couple of guys coming back from injury. We say Declan Dalton, Robbie O'Flynn, Shane Kingston, all see it. They're going to be available for the Clare match. Does he start then and up them now and keep some of the older guys in reserve on the bench? And it's a big call, you know. And Clare coming down to Cork will fancy their chances, particularly after the performance they gave last weekend, but what they've been doing consistently over the last couple of weeks. They have really, really performed. So Cork are really up against this. And The one saver that I feel is that we're getting goals. We can get goals. This guy, Alan Connolly, got a very good goal again against Waterford last weekend. We've done reasonably well in Parky Cueve in terms of scoring goals and Clare are conceding. We're going to need a good few of them on Sunday to win the match, Michael. And it's just there's no holding back on that. Cork were really disappointing last weekend. I was really disappointed. Cork public were disappointed. And they just got it. Dust themselves down and get on with it. No, though, you don't. This word potential and this word delivery. And we've lots of potential, but you have to deliver. You have to deliver on the big day.
Could I take up a point on that with you, Tomás? You haven't mentioned it, but you played the closing minutes with 13 men. It's from my memory of Damon Callan was sent off on a second yellow, which I felt at the time was very, very unfair. You're a hurling man.
The second yellow card was very unfair, Martin.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was very unfair. I thought it was a 50-50 ball. He was behind. I thought genuinely trying to play the ball, flicked it away. Maybe he caught the lad's hand all right. But there was no malintent in it.
I thought it was a harsh yellow. There was a black card to Joyce, and we conceded a penalty. So you're right, Cork were down to 13 men at that stage. But look, that kind of camouflages over a few things, Martin. But we really didn't deserve to win, right, on Sunday, right? And Waterford, a better team, looked. And Waterford made their intentions very, very clear. I mean, we got the first score, Pat Hargett free. And I think 90 seconds into the game, Jamie Byrne picks up a ball in midfield and goes through the middle and bang into the back of the net. And we were open, and we were very open in terms of defence. And look, to me, it was just massive, massive disappointment. And They got it. Look, yeah, you can say down to 13 men, all the advantages, definitely with Waterford. And they did take their chances and they pushed on because it was tight enough at that stage. We'd gone back to within a point. We got to level of one stage, but we never really, really pushed on that I felt Cork would have done, right, and should have done in terms of maybe introductions, Robbie Flynn coming into the fray, younger guys coming into the fray. That's the strength and depth that we had in terms of the subs. And they would be game changers, but it didn't happen. It didn't materialize.
And the incredible thing about it, of course, this is kind of stating the obvious, but in the Munster Championship, the Hurling Championship, and particularly the structure that is there in the hurling at the moment. Like, you look at the fixtures, not just the games played, but the fixtures, they're all big games, basically.
Yeah. You know, they're all massive games, Mike. And yeah. You look at it, right? You know, Limerick on a high after last weekend. They've Tipperary coming to get the grounds next Sunday, right? You've Cork and Clare in Cork and Queeve. Two massive, massive games. And Limerick are going to be looking at this and saying to themselves, let's go beat Tip. We now put our, we go beat Tip with our home advantage. We will put ourselves in the driving seat for All-Ireland Series, whether it's the most final, but more than likely All-Ireland Series. And like, that has to be on their mind now. But taking into consideration what happened in Ennis, got out of jail, bit of a Houdini act to get out of there. Let's push on now. Let's get a victory against Tipperary. And then we're saying, we're looking at the bigger picture. The drive for five is real and it's live at that stage. And not having to go through what they've been through Munster last year. If you remember Munster last year, Michael?
Yeah, yeah.
They were haunted to survive against Cork, right? And look what happened afterwards. As soon as they got into the ground of Croke Park, they became a different team. And the belief became different as well, right? You know, so that's how tight it is in Munster, you know? And look, we can't forget on the other side, Michael, that's Leinster in terms of where that is at as well. And, you know, the results at the weekend, I had fancied Wexford to beat Dublin, 121-218, finishes as a draw. We expect the results, Galway 225, Cavan 240, or Carlow 214, Kilkenny 530, Antrim 13 points. Those results were kind of as expected. So the big game there next weekend is your own county, Michael, Galway against Kilkenny above in Pear Stadium. So I think that's a real decider who moves on in terms of maybe going to a Leinster final and stuff like that as well, you know.
Oh, it is, yeah. As I said, it's all fascinating, as it should be, of course, in the championship, and as it should be going forward. And it's the great thing about it is that it's becoming more, we can have whinges at times about the structure of the championship or the timing of it and blah-de-blah. But in the current setup, because it's not knockout, as simple as that anymore, you know, you lose a match and you're gone and that's the end of your year and all that. Now it's kind of, there are so many permutations that it's kind of sometimes it's a bit difficult nearly to give up with it all, don't even know. But that's the great thing about it, and that's what we love.
Go on ahead, Michael. I was going to make a point actually, Michael, just on the Cork issue and on the Cork support. Ross mentioned it actually, but in Kerry on Sunday as well, or Saturday rather. There was 17,000 people, 18,000 people for the Cork-Kerry game. And again, I thought to myself, the Cork public or the Cork support base outnumbered the Kerry support base. And, you know, we had complained about the lack of crowds, the lack of atmosphere in games. And equally on Sunday, if you looked at the Cavan-Tyrone game, I mean, you had something there. You have four goals and something like 39 points between the two teams after 100 minutes football. And Tomás mentioned a few minutes ago about the, you know, about potential and delivery and about maybe the lack of new players or not enough new players on the Cork team. Like Tyrone, I think, now I'm open to question this, but it's brought in 8 or 9 debutants championship debutants in that game against Cavan. And they're a team that are building very, very neatly for the future. In a couple of years' time, I saw their OMA CBS team this year in the McGorry final against Dungannon. I saw them in the All-Ireland semi-final against St. Gerald's, Castlebar and Ballyshannon. And my God, they have a wonderful crop of young players coming through. But you know, in the present tense, the Canavan brothers, Dara and Rory, and you know, players like that, they bring excitement. They bring a bit of colour to games, and they have those little kind of skill sets that spectators want to go and watch and to see them. And to be fair to Cavan, to see their spirit and the way the likes of Porrick Faulkner and Nigel Carlin, you know, delivered goals at vital stages of that game last Sunday. It made for very, very exciting football, and that's what we want to see. And, you know, sometimes kind of teams say, it's not up to us to entertain. Well, you know something, lads, it is up to you to entertain. It's up to you to give the code a kind of a bit of a G-up and give it a sense of what it's worth. And seeing last Sunday, both in hurling and football, games with high excitement, with, you know, unexpected twists in it and all of that, all of a sudden I thought the championship burst into life.
Yeah, and you could smell the grass, Martin, and the weather was good. The sun was shining, you know. So
it was lovely, Tomás. It was lovely.
Hopefully next weekend, you know. I mean, there's going to be, Michael, there's going to be a massive crowd in Cork. I think all stand tickets are sold out for this match a couple of weeks back when they were released. Cork's two next matches, one against Clare at home, the following 2 weeks later on a Saturday night is against Limerick. It's a sellout as well. So,
yeah,
huge excitement. And look, expectation, Cork's were very, very high in terms of the hurlers this year. And they have another chance on Sunday. And look, we are starved, Martin. We're starved. Yeah. So, hurling and football, you know,
Shoots of hope, like with the footballers at the weekend. I mean, they pushed Kerry the whole way. I think there was only 3 points in it at full time. I think Cork probably give their best display of the season, actually, in that. I mean, a lot of the better Kerry players look quite mortal. Like Paddy Clifford didn't score. David was okay, got his normal two or three from play. But, you know, when you think about it, it was Graham O'Sullivan and Thomas O'Sullivan, two of the defenders, certainly one of them, Tom O'Sullivan, in the full back line. They got 4 points between them, and it was their kind of, you know, thrusts into the forward line that actually made the difference at the end. But the Cork public definitely got value for money watching their footballers on Sunday in Killarney. And that is something that you couldn't say, or that you haven't been able to say, actually, in quite a while.
Yeah, I think looking around the country, lads, over the weekend, we definitely got value from what we saw, both in the hurling and the football. And obviously, we're looking forward to more of the same coming up next weekend. It's a case of throwing another few logs in the fire, lads. It's all warming up.
Martin
Carney, Tomás Mulcahy, great to talk to you. And a big thank you to everybody for listening. And a thank you also, of course, to our sponsors, Club Rossi. They are the fundraising arm of Roscommon GEA, celebrating their 10th anniversary this year and doing great work down there in Roscommon at Dr. Hyde Park. And also the Dromedary Centre of Excellence, which they are busy working on at the moment. So thank you again very much to them. Thank you, as I said, to you for listening. Talk to you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.